Hi again, everybody. Jungle Jim coming at you with another episode of The Suspendables with me and Russ Cortinel. Rusty was in L.A. this weekend. The Vikings were in town. And, of course, his daughter dates Eric Kendricks from the team. And he was tailgating. Love the stories about tailgating. Defining moments in guys' career. We can't ignore Tiger, what he did this weekend. And he's a new guy. Russ talks about that. Fighting. Drew Doughty said there should be fighting. Russ weighs in on that. And guys are making a bunch of money off autographs. You're going to want to hear about that as well. Taylor Hall trade. And Russ, when he played hockey, they had a spy on the bench. Yes. This, is, of course, has to do with the Patriots apparently filming the Cincinnati Bengals sideline, trying to figure out the calls. We got that and much, much more coming up in the show. Results are in, Rusty. Numbers are up.
Ooh.
Yep, numbers are up. Thanks to everybody. We got, I don't know, over 120,000 downloads of the show, and we're averaging sort of a 5,000 to 6,000 a day. That's growing all the time, each show, listening to it. So thanks to everybody.
Awesome. I was on a conference call for our charity today with my brothers, and Jeff said, everyone's coming up to me talking about the Suspendables and that your brother's got a podcast. He goes, you never even told me. And I said, well, I didn't want to say anything in case it failed.
Listen, for years, you live in LA, and I was, you know, Jim Jerome or Jungle on the radio, but everyone, you know, everyone knew my real name. And I ran with this for many years, that guys would come up to me and go, holy man, are you ever doing good, you know? You do that show out of L.A., you know, the Jim Jerome show, and they met Jim Rome.
Right? Jim Rome, yeah.
I said, and I'd look at him and about to tell him, and you know, I go, yeah, thanks, absolutely. Yeah. I wouldn't deny a thing. Rusty, we've got a kind of sponsor for the month, okay, through Christmas. There we go. There it is. It's not them yet. It should be. It's not White Claw, because we got lots to talk about this week. But my buddy Drew Schammelhorn at Elite Sportswear, you know I got into those T-shirts, right?
And you nailed it.
You nailed it, you know? I said, I'm going to do these shirts, Russ. And people, but there's been, I don't know, 40 or 50 people who want them. And Russ, when it came down to brass tacks, you know, I thought, here it is. This will cover some cost. There might be a few hundred bucks left over. You know, I can buy some shit for you and I. And then when it ended up, Russ, charging $35 a shirt, I walked away the other day going, okay, so I got to pay $58 a shirt. So Drew Schammelhorn, who's here in town, and you have a connection to him and that you don't know about, but I'll explain that when I figure it all out. He's from Elite Sportswear. Mm-hmm. Promotional marketing here in town. He's going to make all the shirts for us. And also, Russ, because we got a lot of people who want these things, and not just shirts, but they want hoodies and hats and all this stuff. So here's what we're telling the listeners right now. Watch out for our upcoming web store launch.
Ooh.
Rusty.
Ooh, ooh,
okay?
Ooh, ooh.
Where you can order your latest and greatest merch and swag from T-shirts, hoodies, travel mugs, sports bags, and more. We're going to launch this thing in the beginning of January. So we're super excited about that. These guys are great. They're on the forefront of promotional shit.
Thank God you found him, because, you know, he started his business in his garage and now he's living in a freaking mansion, and you were starting your business in your house and you were going to end up living in your garage.
I know. I'm going to have to end up making blankets.
Why am I losing money?
Yeah. What happened there? Nobody told me this would happen, or everybody did.
$35 plus shipping, knucklehead.
Yeah, it just all backfired on me. God. Anyway, Drew's got a great story, Elite Sportswear and promotional marketing in town. And they got everything, okay? There's a bunch of stuff in there that I thought no one would want this. And then I thought of you.
Okay, oh, God.
Here's the shit. So it's here it is, shirts and hats and all this stuff that they can do. It's fantastic. And then he goes, come and look at this other shelf we have here. And maybe you can think of someone who would want this, you know? And I'm going, okay, let's have a look. Well, Well, here's a here's an embroidered beer mug you can get.
A koozie.
I can think of a guy who would need that I know.
Love koozies.
Here's a leather cigar pack that you can
get. Bingo.
Yeah. Okay. That's it. Yeah, I think I know a guy. Yeah.
Two for two.
Here's a cooler. Okay, that you can get the names on.
Three for three.
Yeah, I said, here we go.
Here we go.
Yeah, exactly. So
the cigar cutter, wine opener.
All that.
Decanters.
Yeah, all that stuff. So
I'm easy to buy for, by the way.
You're very easy to buy for.
You know, Christmas, it should be a no-brainer.
Give Russ liquor?
Yeah. No. Don't do that.
White Claws. We're onto the White Claws thing. Anyway, thanks a lot to Drew and Elite Sports. You're going to hear more about it. We really appreciate that, and super excited. We're going to have our own little web store.
Beautiful.
Yeah, with everything you need. So
thanks for saving Jim's ass.
Yeah, thank you, Drew.
Not only would he be losing his weekly bets on sporting events that he bets on and can't pick a winner.
Funny you should bring that up, you.
Uh-oh.
You Norton.
Do you have an announcement? Do you have a win?
I got a win yesterday.
Oh!
Yeah, I got a win, and then I lost the Sunday nighter, but I got an afternoon win because I bet on the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah. Well, I went to the game yesterday. It was great.
Yeah, you were. We saw your seats. Steve, our editor, we're hooked on the same group text now, the three of us. And I said to Steve, I had to force it out of him, I said, aren't you sick of Russ sending these fucking pictures? You know what I figured out, Russ? And I want to talk about this tailgating experience because we don't do much of it in Canada.
Oh, I got a good story.
I just figured out, Russ, that you have never, ever spent time in the snow other than you went to Saskatchewan to school, to Notre Dame. You grew up in Victoria where you can play golf year-round. It's one of the most beautiful spots in the country. And the rest of your life, you've been in L.A. and Hawaii.
Nah, not true. Not true. I was 5 years in Toronto, 4 years in Montreal.
Oh, what am I thinking of? Yeah.
Year in Minnesota. Come on. That's
the stupidest thing I've ever said.
Yeah.
You spent most of your life in the snow.
No, but lately I have. When I was living in Maui for those 3.5 years, I never hit a season. It was perfect. I had my summers off in Gaza and. And then, so those 3.5, 4 years, it was perfect.
I want to talk about this tailgating thing, but we have some people that we need to shout out. And one is, this guy now has become our sort of official fan. There's other guys, Jeff Huska and his family, they've been listening. He's got all his kids listening to the show, he says, when we can. I got my cousin in Pickering, Ontario, Russ, his first name's Jerome.
Oh, boy.
Isn't that weird? Yeah. And Jimmy Michaud, a buddy of mine, his neighbor, Jimmy passed away a couple of years ago, but his neighbor reached out and he's listening. Craig Hollop is another guy. And then this guy, Russ, I don't know who it is, gets a hold of me, okay, mm-hmm. and says, hey, Jimmy, I live in Sudbury, right down the street from, they've named a sports complex after my dad there years ago, and I live right down the street. And, he's got lots to say. About 2 weeks ago, he says, I caught wind of your podcast. And as a 50-year-old lad and a huge Habs fan, I decided to start listening. Well, holy fuck. I binged it and caught up in 3 days. I'm a stay-at-home dad now. Nice gig there. Kind of like you, Russ. Stay-at-home dad now. So I've had the AirPods in throughout the day. As I do stuff around my house. I run a Friday afternoon men's league here and I've sent all the boys messages to listen to the podcast. He's got them all going.
Beautiful.
Here's what he's doing. Okay, Russ. This summer, he has got a rink, Russ. He spent $100,000. Okay, his wife doesn't know this. He's spent $100,000.
Outdoor rink, right?
On this rink. He told her it was 40K. It's a year-round rink with NHL boards.
Oh, my God.
I actually ordered from a company out in Edmonton, out here. I've got $100,000 into this thing now. The wife thinks it's 40.
Sounds like a Vegas gambling trip.
Yeah, it does.
I lost 40, but really I lost 100.
Anyway, wants the logo. He's going to put it on the boards.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so he's one of our biggest fans now. And he's got a bunch of other guys listening to it. So thanks a lot to Dean. That's who we got this from, Dean.
Love it. Attaboy, Dean.
Yeah, in Sudbury. So you were tailgating.
Yes, first time.
First time. Tell us about the tailgating now.
So we left. It took us about an hour to get there. Got there. I wanted to get there early so we could have some White Claws and hang out and barbecue. So we went and bought. There was about 30 people coming. My daughter's friends from school who are friends of Eric's and a couple parents. And Eric's mom came with Allie. Lawton's here with his girlfriend. So Paris and I, we get load up the car and we go down there, and I've got the tequila bag, a cooler bag. So I got the tequila bar for Tequila Alley. My daughter likes tequila once in a while. So I had the shaker, had all this Casamigos, and so I had the tequila bag. I had the White Claw cooler bag, and then I had the beer bag for Lawton.
Right.
Paris, I got two other cooler bags. So we put the condiments for the brats and
buns. How many cooler bags did you bring? Jesus.
It's awesome, right? They got the barbecue set up. They got everything set up, tables, chairs. We just got to bring our food and some booze. And so
right,
we're all fired up. Paris is making salad. She's going to bring salad and brats.
Right.
So I go buy everything the day before. We get down there. We park like 10 cars from where we got to be. So it's everything's going perfect. Had to pay $100, believe it or not, for frickin' parking, but it was well worth it once we got all set up and I kind of relaxed about the hundo. But we get set up. It's maybe 10:45. Game starts at 1. We've got time.
Right.
They've got the barbecue getting ready. We start pulling out our food. They're laying all this food out all over the place. It's unreal. Mm-hmm. She forgot the fucking brats.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So I was pissed. And I'm gluten intolerant, right? So it's like the only thing the salad and the bratwurst was about the only thing I was going to be able to eat. So initially I was pissed and I was like, fuck, can't believe right. it. And Lawton, he was so looking forward to the bratwurst.
Right.
Anyway, so that was a bit of a drag, but thank God everybody else had lots of food. So we had hamburgers and all kinds right. of other stuff. So what, it was great. It was fun.
What's the deal there, Russ? I've been to one tailgate thing years ago in Buffalo. And I was sort of impressed the way they had it. First of all, they let everyone have liquor, of course.
Yes. Yeah.
So
there's police everywhere, by the way.
Police everywhere, but it's kind of calm. And there was like three aisles. You know, one's sort of the family section. The next one's a little rowdier. And the last one's out of control.
I didn't see a lot of kids there. I did see kids, but I didn't see a lot of kids. And it was like a home game for the Vikings. There was Viking fans everywhere.
Well.
Sea of purple. And I saw no problems, but there was a lot of police. So you parked, and it went forever. It was the whole stadium parking lot where we were. I mean, it was just like hundo, 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 hundo as each car went by us. I was like, I'm $100 for parking. Holy right there. So you get out, you know, put everything back in your car, and you're right beside the stadium. So it's like the primo spot. But they had bathrooms set up. They had police going up and down the aisles. So there was I didn't see one problem, but man, was there a lot of barbecuing going on. It smelled so good.
Right.
And I wish it, I actually kind of wish I was there for like 4 hours before the game instead of two. But we had a blast and it all worked out. So, and then we kicked ass. I mean, it was embarrassing. The Chargers got booed when they came on the field.
On the field.
So it was, yeah, so I posted a picture, you know, warmest city in Minnesota right now, home game for the Vikings. And besides 80% of the fans there were Viking fans, it felt like a home game. Like they were booing the home team. It was hilarious.
Yeah, I wouldn't have, knowing me, back in my blurry days, I would have never made it into the stadium. I would have never, I was like, pass, you guys go ahead.
Yeah, and just sit there and drink. But you know what? Everybody went in. I have heard of people that don't go to the games. They just go to the tailgate and stay in the parking lot. I have heard that before.
Right.
And they're there for the, you know, obviously the tailgating and then the game. They can watch it on their TVs they bring if they've got the direct, you know, the DirecTV package or whatever, to satellite dish or whatever. You can watch game. I guess you can watch games anywhere now. But anyways, there are, I've heard of those people that just don't go in. And for $100, you know, if you're going to stay there all day and split it a bunch of ways, I guess it's a good deal. But I would do it again. I loved it. I would bring my, I'd bring a better game, cooking game though.
Yeah, you would have to.
I would put more effort into the food and stuff, and I would go earlier. I'd be there at 9 o'clock when the gates open.
Yeah. The night before.
Yeah. Maybe stay overnight.
Yeah. Wait, like waiting for concert tickets, you know, that people sleep overnight.
Yeah.
And Russ, I might understand too that, I said, how are they going to handle this where everyone's getting hammered or having fun? There's all sorts of booze. The one I was at, they let you walk into the stadium with your booze after. Are you allowed to do that there?
Mm-mm.
Oh, you got, okay, you can't.
So you can walk with your drink, as we did, right up to before you go in, and then they had garbage cans.
There you go.
And you can dispose of your drink. And then my daughter might or might not have brought in a few airplane bottles of tequila.
Breaking the law, baby. We love
it. Yeah. But yeah, we had to switch hard seltzers and drink the 16-ouncers, and they were $12 each.
Oh,
yeah, at the stadium, yeah. Wasn't cheap.
What, Russ, you've been around hockey your whole life, and now you're, by the way, if you don't know, Hendrix, I forget his first name, who plays for Minnesota.
Kendrix. You're wishing you were drinking Hendrix right now, but you're not. You're retired.
Obviously, I forget his whole name. Yeah. Your daughter is goes out with him. They're dating. Yeah. And tell me this, Russ. In the game itself, you sent a great picture. You had great seats.
Mm-hmm.
What are NFL fans or American fans like? Do you notice any different? Are they crazy ass?
Yeah, they dress up for the game. I always refer to the NFL as like every Sunday's a playoff game. Everybody puts so much effort. There's one game, and then, you know, especially if they're in the playoffs or on the edge, maybe a wild card. There's so much riding on each game. It's like every game is a playoff until you're mathematically eliminated, and then it's freaking done. But still, the fans get dressed up like it's Halloween and they're fired up. And then a lot of standing, like for the plays. And when I was on my way home last night, John Cooper, coach of Tampa Bay, called me and he was like, do you know in a 1 hour game of football, there's only 16 minutes of action? And I started thinking about it. You're right. There's a lot of, you know, waiting for something to happen, for a play. So there's only 16 minutes of plays.
It's funny you say that, because that's totally coincidental, because I timed it last night because I recorded the game. I had shit to do. And so I recorded the night game. It's 6:30 out here. And I came home and I just zipped through everything. Okay? I zipped through, obviously, all the commercials. And I zip right until they snap the ball. So once a play's finished, I whip it on to fast forward again until the next play.
Yeah.
And I finished watching that game in 15 minutes from start to finish.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's just funny. Yeah, there's just so little time. But anyway, everyone sort of owes it to themselves to get to a tailgating thing one day to see it. So a couple things, Rusty. L.A. guy, Drew Doughty.
Yeah.
Interview the other day says you got to have fighting. You got to have fighting in the game. It's, correct me if I'm wrong, Russ. Obviously, it's. I think it's, there's less and less fighting.
Yeah.
From back in the day, this subject just never goes away.
Mm-hmm.
People love to talk about it, and there's two sides to this thing. It's, you know, just, I guess the instigator penalty, Russ, stopped a bunch of fighting. Or players are bigger, faster. They make way more money, so we don't want them fighting. What's the deal, Russ? That in your day fighting, you got many stories about fights you were in.
Oh my gosh, every team had, you know, at least two tough guys when we played, and sometimes three. I mean, Edmonton, you look back on those. They had Dave Semenko, yep. Marty McSorley, and what's the third guy? McClellan.
Yep.
I mean, three. And then, you know, they had some pretty tough. They had Hunter.
Yeah.
I mean, so they had more than three. The game, you know, the rules changed. The game changed. And now there's probably, you know, one really tough guy. You know, Reeves is probably one of the tougher guys in the league. But every team usually has one. And then there's guys who are really good players that, you know, can fight. And Wendell Clark's a great example, who was just an unbelievable player and goal scorer and one of the toughest guys in the NHL. So he could play. I think that all the players today that are on the ice have to be able to play the game and play it well. Where back in the old days, that wasn't the case. They just had to be, you know, they for sure had to be a great fighter. And then if they could play, that was a bonus. But now you can't have a weak link out there. The teams are so good. The players are so good. The game's so fast. Mm-hmm. The game isn't good. I like the game today. I was watching some highlights and there's just so much talent out there. And every year we get a new hero, a new star. And I just think that NHL is in such a great place right now, and I wish people would just, well, maybe they'll never leave the fighting alone, but there's going to be fighting, and it's just the way it is, and it's good when you have it.
When you watch some of those games, Russ, whether you're watching summaries or clips or full games, you as you just mentioned, you played in an era where there was a bunch of fighting. Do you ever look at it and go, now someone's got to take that guy and beat the shit out of him?
Yeah. I just don't like, I've talked about this on the show. I just don't like players who can't back it up, that are throwing their shit around and they can't fight, they can't back it up, and they're hiding behind something. You know, just back when I played, I've said this over and over. I mean, I don't know if I ever had an elbow or cross checking penalty, because if you did that, that meant you're going to freaking fight somebody, and I wasn't a fighter. And so I did have a few fights, but you know, with people like me who were, you know, non-fighters, but I just don't like the player who goes around and doesn't back it up. I mean, if you're going to spear somebody or you're going to cheap shot somebody, you better be able to drop the gloves and defend yourself, because that doesn't fly in my view.
Mm-hmm. You talk about, there's all sorts of stuff that comes out at the end of the year, you know, when they do the year-end wrap-ups, highlights from the year. You know, it's always top 10 of the day, the monthly sports highlights or bloopers or whatever. And so there's a thing now they're talking about, I don't know who's done it, the Score or somebody else, where they're going to do every Monday they count down the top 100 defining moments over the last decade in sports.
Oh boy.
And some guys, unfortunately, their defining moments were fights, suspensions. You know, you think of Marty, Bertuzzi, these other guys. But I was watching the President's Cup this week.
No, I bet you were.
I was watching wall
sucking
to wall.
Your thumb.
I know. It was great. And you know, Tiger Woods, of course, was the captain of the team. The States ended up winning this thing. If you don't know what it is, it's United States plays everybody except Europe. In a competition, team competition. It happens every couple of years. And Tiger Woods has had many, many defining moments. But one of the great things I took away from that thing was you got to see Tiger like you've never seen him before, highly emotional. They followed him around the golf course the whole time, hugging guys, high-fiving. He ended up crying at the end of the thing. Mm-hmm. And he really came away from this thing saying, this is one of the greatest moments of my life.
Yeah.
Winning this thing, and you wouldn't expect that.
Well, he's eaten a lot of humble pie over the years, from getting caught, you know, with the whole family or wife thing, you know, everything that came out, and then he got addicted to opioids,
right.
And so his career was in a lot of us just thought he was never ever going to play again, and to this level, and then he got nailed, you know, driving around. He didn't know where he was, and he had all these opioids in his system, and he was screwed up and hooked on drugs, and then right. got off. And his career has come back. And what I've seen is a guy who was just focused on Tiger and winning.
Yeah.
And now he's focused on his kids. He's focused on his happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And he's focused on golf. And you can just see it all come together. And I think I whether you're a Tiger fan or not, and I am, we're witnessing a guy who's got a second chance at life. Mm-hmm. At happiness and golf, and he's it's just so beautiful to watch. It's such a great story.
Not only that, Russ, but I think it's a great example of a guy who gets his personal life in order,
mm-hmm.
who's come through controversy,
mm-hmm.
who was the best athlete on the planet,
best golfer on the planet. Go easy there, big fella.
Best athlete.
I know you're a fucking golf.
With the exception of you and Wayne.
You just love golf more than anything. Come on now. Best athlete in the world? Come on. Best golfer in the world.
Okay. And you know, he's winding down, or supposed to be winding down his career, comes through all this stuff. Here's the deal, Russ. The guy is playing the best golf he's ever played.
That's great.
Okay?
Yeah.
And you got to think, Russ, it's because he's in such a great place in
yeah.
his life,
yeah.
wouldn't you?
And he's enjoying the guys. He's enjoying the game. And, you know, I don't think when he was winning, before all this shit happened to him and he was winning, I don't think he was having as much fun as he's having now. He just looks so happy. And I had the pleasure of meeting him at Sherwood, at the Tiger Woods event, and I watched him with the guys in the I was on the board of Sherwood Country Club, so I got to go into the where they eat after golf,
right?
And so I was sitting there with a couple caddies that were hockey fans, and he was joking around having fun, but you know, his golf game wasn't great then, and now he just looks happy, and he looks like he's happy to be Tiger right now, and I don't know if he was happy to be Tiger early on. You got to love yourself, man. If you're not happy with yourself, then the rest of your things in your life are not going to they're not going to go as well as they could.
Yeah, I can relate. I gotta admit, I don't talk about it very often on this show, but I can relate. You know, where this guy was going through this time, this dark period, addicted mm-hmm. to opioids. I was an abuser, booze and alcohol abuser for most of my life, most of my adult life. And
you would have set records like Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I would have set records. Yeah,
just saying.
Majors. I did. Yeah, I won the Grand Slam. Okay, I won it every year.
Yeah,
all events. But
not to make fun of it, but you were good at it.
Yeah, I was great at it, and but to recover from it.
Yeah.
And I'm in recovery. I have been for 10 years.
Yeah. We love you for it.
Yeah. I get exactly what you're saying. I get exactly what you're saying, that you get to a happy place, you know, the risk of sounding corny. When we think about that, Russ, aside from, I know the day you got drafted was a defining moment in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You played at a very high level. But after you started playing hockey, Russ, and got over that awesomeness of mm-hmm. as you always talked about, just looking up once in a while, pinching yourself, going, I can't believe I'm locked in here. I'm here to stay in the NHL. And after that point, Russ, when you think of you've played at all levels, pro, amateur, Olympic level, world championship, stuff like that. What do you have a defining moment, Russ? Is there one or two things that stick out, or three or four, or one?
I've always said that just being a Canadian kid and then playing in the NHL was it's such an honor. I mean, every kid in Canada and now in the United States, and maybe around the world where we're countries who play hockey, everybody wants to play in the NHL. But one of the things a couple things I'm really proud of is I represented Canada at every level. The only Canadian team I didn't play for is the tournament at Christmas in Davos, but I coached there, so I wasn't a player, but I played at the World Juniors, I played in the Olympics, I played in Team Canada for the and world championships. And so that was, you know, that's awesome when you get to represent your country. And then just being the first two brothers to play 1,000 games each was super cool. And I've talked about that too. Jeff and I were the first two brothers, and it's a good trip.
You're way up there. Yeah,
good trivia question, but I unfortunately didn't win a Stanley Cup, and if I had won a fucking Stanley Cup, it'd be the one. Lost in 89 to Calgary, and that, you know, it stings because you get that close, two wins away, and you don't. I was playing golf at Sherwood the other day with my son, Lawton, and we were on number, we just hit on the fourth tee box.
Right.
So seven is to the right of us, and we went down to get some more ice for our drinks. Shocker.
Of course.
And Gretz pulled up. So we were talking to Gretz, and he was playing golf with John McEnroe, who's just an awesome guy. I got to spend some time with him at Gozer, and just a freaking stud and wonderful, wonderful guy. So nice to everybody he talks to. And then Chris Chelios. So Chelly and I played together in Montreal, and he, you know, I was looking at him, and that freaking, the guy, you know, he won, and
I love him.
Yeah, Chelly's great. He won he won his first cup in Montreal in '86.
Yeah,
and then he won again in Detroit, and just some guys. There's some guys just, you know, they're on those teams, and they're a part of that team. You're a small part, a big part, doesn't matter. You're part of that team, and that never goes away. And there was a guy named Mike Camacho in the group.
I know Camacho.
You know Camacho. Yeah, Camacho's great, right? So he's the fourth.
Just a backstory on that guy. Interesting, because there's so many interesting guys there. I've been there tons. I think that guy started the Oprah Winfrey Channel.
He's some to do with agency. I thought like boxing, or I don't know, but agency, and he sold it, and maybe it was that. And that's the cool thing about Camacho. I mean, he just loves golf and loves he plays golf now every day. He's a young guy. He's retired, and he's got a family. He lives in the area, and he lives every day like it's his freaking last one.
Right,
anyways, so I introduced Lawton to McEnroe, Chelly. Obviously, he knows cool. Gretz.
Yeah.
And then Camacho walks away. He goes, "I'm not a Hall of Famer, so I guess you don't want to meet me."
He's right. Yeah.
So I'm like, "Come on, Mike, get down here." And he's like, "Ah, fuck off." Went up and hit his ball. But anyways, that was cool for Lawton to see Gretz, because Gretz is a big fan of Lawton and always asking how he's doing. And then it was nice for Lawton to meet those other two superstars. So
nice. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah.
I know some guys, you know, it's from my old radio days and my old podcast days. You know, that question of what defines your moments in your career, or what are they, defining moments? And quite often, guys who've retired or even are playing, there might be an obvious one. You know, like you say, your regret is not winning the Stanley Cup. I had that down here, Russ, but I'm always nervous about you. I'm going, ask Russ if his biggest regret's not winning a cup. And I got big question marks going. No, maybe. Yeah.
Well, every player who doesn't win will tell you the same thing.
What's cool about a lot of these guys is often it's not uncommon that they will say, I'll tell you what I really like is I still get letters coming to my house from people requesting autographs. And a couple of the letters they will read or receive are heart-wrenching. Or unbelievable feel good stuff about, you know, what this player meant to this, particularly kids, you know, and that'll trump all this other stuff sometimes that a guy says, you know, this makes it all worth it, you know, that you're making some kid's day. And do you still get requests, Russ?
So I actually, it's funny with the internet, because I've moved a lot. Paris and I have, you know, built houses after my career. We've moved, you know, built, sold, moved. And so these guys find you no matter what. You're like one week in your brand new house and freaking the fan mail starts showing up.
Right.
So I get about 10 to 20 letters a week, and cards are in the mail, these collectors.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the guy who's full of shit said, you know, oh, I was a huge fan and here's five cards. You know, I'm not going to sell them. Right. Could you please sign them? They're for my friend Joe and my son Bob. And
right.
Yeah, right. You're going to freaking put them on and get your dollar for them. But did I tell you the story about Gretz?
No.
I'm sure I told the story, but I'll tell it again. So, yes, I do get about 10 to 20 cards a week. So, Gretz sells his, he buys his, that beautiful big house he built at Sherwood.
Taj Mahaki.
Taj Mahaki. He buys it back, and the real estate agent who put the deal together, because it wasn't on the market, said, can I just promote this as a sale and mention your name? And he goes, no problem. Well, he put the freaking address of the house down.
So
the mailman, they had to set up a separate area at the post office for all this mail that Gretz is getting. All over the world, people are writing him letters because now they know where he lives.
Yeah.
He's always had a P.O. box or an office, right? And it always went there, I guess.
Sure. But
anyways.
Good one by the realtor.
But I do get, you know, the autograph seekers find you. And I'm sure every player that played the game who had a card made of them is getting the same, you know, same asks.
What's your take on that, Russ? Because the reality is, I've been to events, you know, fundraisers, silent auctions. I've been to Brantford a million times doing events for Walter and Wayne.
Yeah,
and they walk along the table with the stuff, and I was with Glenn. And he was, as he walked along, he pointed at stuff that was, most of the stuff was signed by Wayne, you know?
Right.
And he said, that's fake. That's real. That's real. That one's fake. That's fake. That's fake. That's fake. Guys do make money off this stuff, Russ. And I know Brett Hall got so pissed about it that even though he said, look, we do make money in hockey, but is it really fair that a bunch of people are making a bunch of money off your shit? And you're not entitled to any of it. He would sign a card and then rip the corner.
Yeah, you know? He was the guy that did that to damage the card, right?
Yeah, to damage the card.
And I forgot who did that. I heard that story. He just takes a little piece of the corner and rips it off.
Yeah, yeah. Because
that's funny.
I might have to agree with him. You know, I might have 20 things show up at your house a week. You sign them, and the guy's selling these as part of a collection of the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, there's a few guys in Toronto that pay you to come, and
that's fair.
And you depending on what kind of player you are, you get paid per autograph, and they charge the fan, and then they pay the player. And the older guys, like Richard, was it? When he was, they would get, guys would get him to sign like 100 jersey numbers, and then they would put it on jersey and they'd sell the jerseys. When they get low, he would sign another 100 and they would pay him. And I'm sure he was making good money.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are ways for players to do it, but I just feel like, you know, I've done those shows. So I've done those autograph shows and I've made a couple bucks, but I'm at that point, I don't know if it's age or whatever, I just feel like, you know what, this guy sent me an autograph. Or if they're pig, like if the guys, if the person sends me like 10 cards, it's gross. And I'm like, that's way too much. But I'll sign, you know, anywhere from 2 to 5. It depends. It really depends who, how much they send, because the guy who sends 1 or 2, you're like, this guy is legit. But you get a big thick package and the guy's like, yeah, I'm not selling these. I'm like, well, why did you send me 10?
right.
Why do you need 10? But anyways, it's always been there. It's been an industry forever of these guys that wait outside the hotels and they wait outside the rinks and they want your autographs. And it's been going on for years and years and years.
Right. Another thing, Russ, that I want to talk to you about is over the last 3 or 4 weeks in the NHL, Taylor Hall, who started in Edmonton and then ended up in New Jersey, he got traded, I guess, today to Arizona. But leading up to it, Russ, every single day I was reading articles about where do you think Taylor Hall is going to end up? Where do you think he's going to end up? And I'm like, who said he's getting traded? You know? And it was a foregone conclusion that this guy was going to leave Jersey and that they were trying to trade him. Explain that whole thing to me, Russ. How does, if you're New Jersey or you're Taylor Hall, this must be planned.
I think New Jersey probably at some point tried to sign Taylor Hall and then realized, look, this guy's going to play out his contract. We don't know, you know, if Taylor Hall wanted to stay, didn't want to stay, wanted too much money. But it was obvious that New Jersey wasn't going to sign him or weren't going to be able to sign him. And how they came to the agreement, like, we want to trade you now. We're going to trade you now, and we need to get it out there. And I don't know if he had a no-trade, a non-no-trade. I don't know the details of it, but somehow, some way, the agent and the team, for the benefit of both, went public with it and said, okay, we got to make this move. And you know, now he's going to a really good team, coached by one of the best coaches in the league, Rick Tocchet. And they've done a great job there, and probably feel like now's the time for them to make a move for a guy like Taylor, and they're giving up quite a bit, and they weren't allowed to negotiate a contract extension with them. So they were
allowed, Russ, or they were not allowed?
No, New Jersey would not allow them to talk to them about an extension. So he's going there with the same contract that he had in New Jersey. And he will, you know, whether he wants to stay there or go, he can at the end of the season go to another team if he wants. So it's going to be interesting to see how he plays. One, if it was worth all that they gave up, all these young players and draft picks. And then two, if they get to sign him. Because, you know, that's a lot. He gave up three players, I think, and two draft picks. For him and another guy, Blake Spears. So two for five, really.
Is the reality of this, Russ, that you can, it's the day of the salary cap and managing money, so you can probably look at all the teams in the NHL, look at their salaries, and go, I guarantee you they're moving this guy because of the amount of money he's making, and I guarantee you they've got to get rid of this, or they've got to bring this in. Or is that sort of how easy it is?
When you're not ready to win, you're not going to sign a guy to $8, $9, $10 million if you don't have to. So New Jersey, it looks like they're in a rebuild, or they don't want to spend $10 million or $9 million or $8 million, whatever he's going to get on one player.
Right.
So it is financial for them. And it is also could be because they believe they're in a rebuild. They've got some good young players and they you know, you can get two $5 million players instead of one $10 million player. So it's definitely financial. And then whoever's signing him, you know, look at the teams. The Kings have this hangover of Stanley Cup hangover of all these great players they had that are at the end of their, you know, coming, they're winding down, not producing like they were because they're older, slower, whatever. And they make too much money. They can't be traded, you know, or they have no trades or whatever. And so the Kings are in a rebuild period right now where they've got these high paid players from winning the Stanley Cups that were great players at one point, and they're just older and slower and just not producing.
Yeah. We finally got a normal firing of a coach in San Jose.
Oh, yeah, for hockey reasons. I love how they came right out. This is for hockey reasons.
Yeah, I know. It's like, everyone's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, what did he do? Where was he the last 48 hours?
Yeah, exactly. Interesting thing I got to ask you about, because I want your take on sort of what's allowed from a team trying to find out stuff about other teams. This past week, the Bengals were playing a game. The Patriots were going to face the Bengals the following week. And a guy, a videographer for the Bengals, is sitting beside another guy from the Patriots. Who's got a video camera with him, and all the guy is filming from the Patriots is the sideline of the Cincinnati Bengals. So apparently they're in trouble. In fact, there's footage out there now of this guy talking to the guy about saying, "Hey, dude, what are you doing? You can't do that. You can't read." So it looks like almost assuredly that he's trying to he's videotaping the coaches on the sideline during the game, trying to figure out what plays they're calling, what their signs are. That looks like almost for sure what this guy's doing, and the Patriots may be in trouble with this. But my take is, well, too bad. Fuck, come up with something where they can't find it. They do it all day in baseball, you know. They
if you ain't teams, cheating, you ain't trying.
Well, is that really what it is? I mean, you watch video of teams when you played, didn't you? Of other teams?
Yeah, you watch video after video. It's like it's insane because everything's videotaped now, and you just, you know, you can't miss anything. You don't miss anything. And Wendell Clark said it best. He was like, you know, we'd go into a building and you might get a tape of the team, but they weren't always televised. So it was like, you didn't always have video in the 80s, but now everything's videotaped. And so you just have every single play. And then they got they've got it on TV. So the guys can watch their replays of their last shift. It's awesome. When I played in Montreal, the benches were right beside each other in the old forum. And we had a few seats in between. And our athletic trainer would stand closest to their bench, and and he would find out who they were, hear who was up next. So the coach usually calls the centerman's name, and that's whose line was up next.
Right.
And he knew. He would tell Pat Burns. He'd go, "Oh yeah, Nieuwendyk's up next," or you know, Gretzky's up. And then he would match the lines that way. So we had a spy at the end of the bench listening for calls of, or, you know, line changes. It was hilarious. So Pat Burns just ran his bench based on what the trainer told him of who, because we knew who we were to play against. So it was priceless.
That's not it. Yeah. So I'm assuming you don't think it's any big deal.
These freaking coaches that cover their mouths when they talk to each other just drives me nuts. I'm like, when I see guys like, they got the program or the line sheet and up in front of their mouths. The only, if you watch, like Rick Tocchet doesn't do it. Like I watched a couple of his games. He's like talking to the guy like, really? Well, somebody's over there reading my lips? Like, read this. Fuck off. I just think it's ridiculous.
What are you, with the FBI? You can read lips?
Oh, these guys. And then the assistant coach, he's going over to the head coach and he's like covering up his mouth. Like, really? You think anybody cares what you're saying right now? Oh, fuck it. It's so, I don't know who started that, but they need to be shot.
Yeah, it's stupid. Well, how would you like to be the lip reader? Okay, so now you got a gig with the other team. You're gonna read the lips of the players.
Well, you have time in football to read the lips. I get that. Okay, they're calling the play, so they're covering their mouth, and some guys could be interpreting that because they got headsets on to the play to the defensive team. Right. So I get that. Right. But the NHL, give me a fucking break. Guy's like whispering to his coach, like, "Hey, you want to go to Mastro's after the game? You want to go out for dinner? Right. Right. If we get out of this hole right now and we come back and win, we can go out. We can go have a great dinner. What do you think? Okay, put out your best line right now. Let's tie this fucker up and so we can go out after." Jesus Christ. The hockey happens too fast. The lip reading would not work. It just doesn't make sense. Anyways, that's one of my pet peeves.
Well, you've been on a bench. And you're probably not, that's probably not too far from the truth, some of the funny shit you've heard on a bench.
Yeah, the only guys who want to cover their mouths are the guys in front of the coach, the players who are ripping the coach behind him going, "Can you fucking believe this coach behind us right now? Oh my God, he's an idiot."
Rusty, we're almost out of time. Another good show. Christmas is coming. There's a very funny story. I think it's funny. You're a Peloton guy now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw this, and Peloton Russ is your workout with a TV screen in front of you, and it's a live chick, right, who's leading everyone through the workout?
Yeah, or a guy. Your choice.
Your choice. Yeah, you get to, because you got a Peloton crush there on someone.
I forget. Allie Love.
She's your girl. So Peloton has come out with a commercial where a dude gives his wife a Peloton for a gift for Christmas. And now everyone's freaking out. All the pundits are coming in saying, you're objectifying women's bodies, and you're saying your wife's body is no good for you. And I'm saying, well, listen, I know a wife who gave her husband one.
Yeah.
She said, you're too fat, you know, get on the bike, man. So I don't know if that's what the Christmas gifts are to you. You know,
25 pounds.
I see you're a little thin in the face there, Russ.
Yeah, I've lost 25 pounds, maybe 30. I did weigh myself the other day, and Paris thinks I was heavier, you know, a year ago. She thinks I was a lot heavier than I'm telling people.
I still love the gag. I go to the gym very infrequently.
Oh, my God. Is there a cigar bar there or a cigarette bar?
Yeah, you can smoke.
Like in the airport? Gym. Glass but cage?
But I saw a guy doing it to his buddy the other day. They got those sort of old-style scales, you know, where it's the big... You move the weights, right?
Oh, yeah,
And the guy's standing on it, and the dude's behind him with his foot on the scale.
Oh, yeah, right? And it's not going down.
It's not going down, right? So he's going, what the fuck? What's your best gift, Rusty? Best gift you've ever received? Okay.
Best gift.
Mine was a ride on Wayne's plane. That was the best gift ever. I had to tell my family.
My kids. My kids would be my best gift.
Isn't that? That's okay. Come on. That's too mushy.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty satisfied with what I have.
How about what you've given? Have you given a pretty cool gift, Vic? Huh? See? Mm-hmm.
Bought my wife a nice ring when we moved back down to California in 07. That was pretty good. That was
there
good.
There you go.
That's a nice ring.
I'm trying to promote the with my kids. You don't have to give me a gift, and I give none of you a gift. That ain't going to cut it. Russ, we're going to be back at it again next Sunday. This is great. What's your week shaping up like? What are you doing? What happens this week?
Well, we've got Lawton home, and then we're all going on the 21st. We're all headed to Minneapolis for Christmas, and then back here before New Year's, so... going to Minneapolis for a week. We're going to be at the Monday night football game with the Vikings and the Packers, which is going to be huge next Monday or this coming Monday. And looking forward to that. So, just going to Minneapolis. That's about it, bud.
Nice, brother. Okay, that's a wrap for everybody. We want to thank...
you don't have a joke for us?
Sure I do. I got a joke. But first I got to thank our buddy at Elite's Sportswear and Promotional Marketing.
Oh, yeah. Saved your ass.
Saved my ass. Drew Schamelhorn. Thank you, Drew. Check them out online. Go to Elite Sportswear. It's in Edmonton. And you can check out what they're doing. But they're going to launch a web store for us. How's that, Russ? It's almost like having our own line. Jeez. It's going to launch in January. They're doing it. And check them out. They got the latest merch on everything.
Hopefully you ran this by Batul.
I did. I ran it by the way. She's all about it. They got everything, TVs, hoodies, travel mugs, sports bags, and tons more. So, look for that in January, and, we're going to have a page. We're going to have a little web page they're going to set us up with. So thanks a lot to Elite Sportswear and to Drew. What joke?
I'll keep putting out some pictures on Instagram, on our Suspendables Instagram, so you can rip me.
Okay. Here's one of my favorites. Okay. I'll keep ripping you on the Instagram.
Yeah.
Here's one of my favorites. So the guy buys a bike. He lives in Ireland, right? He lives north of Dublin. Doesn't have much money. You know, he's like nothing much going on. And he ends up buying this bike, a motorbike. And he immediately goes over to his buddy's place, you know, and he bangs on the door. And his buddy goes, what's up? He goes, come on. I'm going to take you for a ride. I got a new bike, you know. It's beautiful. I'll take you for a spin, you know. And the guy's like, okay. And he jumps on the back of the bike, and they're bombing through the countryside, you know. And the guy taps him on the shoulder, on the back, and he goes, you got to fucking stop. I'm just freezing here. The wind is howling down my neck. I'm going to catch pneumonia, you know, the guy says. Well, look, here's what you do. Stops the bike. Take your jacket off, put it on backwards, okay? Put the collar up So it's on backwards, goes up around your neck. Goes, that's a good idea. So anyway, he does that and he takes off and he turns around to ask him how he's doing about a mile down the road. And he's gone. He's not on the bike. And he throws the bike down. He turns it around and gets back on his bike. And he's driving backwards and down the hill. He sees the guy sitting in the middle of the road. You know, it's all twisted up. And there's a bunch of farmers standing around the guy scratching their heads, you know. And the guy runs to the guy, goes, fuck, is he okay? It's my buddy. And the one farmer goes, well, he was okay. And then we turned his fucking head around. Have a good week, everybody. Thanks, Stevie, doing the editing. Thanks again to Drew Shamorin at Elite Sportswear. Watch for more of that stuff coming. More stories, more shenanigans, more stuff next week on The Suspendables. See you later.